Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Fiction, science fiction, horror, fantasy, crime, LGBT, thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
Heard on KCPW 106.5 FM, Los Angeles,
102.3 FM, Riverside,
and 105.0 AM, Palm Springs.
Welcome back into the House of Mystery, and I am Al Warren, back taking the reins after Mr. That's David right. Martino was driving the bus off the road yesterday.
That's right. I avoided a crash, but barely. Yeah.
Oh, no, it was good. People will like it. You know, come on. It's not that.
Yeah, sure.
It's not a, it's, you know, everything's good.
Not That's right.
Not to be worried. You know, things are good. Okay, so let's see what we've got up today. Now, we're going to be talking true crime today, and we're going to be talking with a man we've had on before. It's been a few years, but this time he's talking from murder to movies. And so, Mr. Paul Drexler, thank you for being on the show.
Pleasure.
Well, Paul, so what have you been up to lately? It looks like last time we talked to you, it was notorious San Francisco. So now we're going from that to the murder to movies. What made you jump into that sort of theme?
Well, I was thinking about it, and it really occurred to me, A, that people are interested in crimes that become movies, and also I wanted to write about something that was not so local to San Francisco, something that could be international. But it's, you know, you watch a so many movies, I mean, so many crimes have been made into movies. And you always watch it and think, that really happened? Or was he really like that? You know, so I've started investigating, and I was really trying to pick crimes that showed more, that were bigger than just the crime, that reflected something that was going on in the world. And I got hooked on it. Some of these stories really just intrigued me.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting thought theme, right, too, because a lot of people don't really know the connection to some of the famous movies they've probably seen, and I think that's great. Now, how did you go about researching something like this?
Well, a lot of it, fortunately, today you can do it online, and it was looking at pretty much some old stories. And I did remember, it's like, you know, the Jimmy Cagney movies, the quintessential James Cagney line is, "You'll never get me alive, coppers. Come and get me," and that kind of stuff. And I found out when I really researched it that you know, Jimmy was a tough Irish kid, but he didn't come up with that line, nor did the scriptwriter. It came from a guy named Francis Crowley. It came from two different people, 31 years apart. These are people who shot it out with police. Their lives played out in barricaded apartments in New York, the sound of bullets, the smell of tear gas, police, and also the excited noise of tens of thousands of people in the street. You can imagine that. So you know, that really kind of intrigued me.
Where do you think they got the, you know, like the ideas, like when they were putting that film together for James Cagney, where do you think, so they got it from Crowley and you're saying Robles. So how was it that they did that? Were they out looking for it? Do you think they just kind of read about it somewhere, overheard it? Like where, how did they connect it?
Well, no, it's also, I mean, there's a lot of truth to it because at that period of time, there were a lot of Irish gangsters, tough guys. They didn't tend to work in a group like the Italians and Jews. But so Jimmy Cagney had that kind of personality. But I think it was there. They didn't like find an article and then just think of it. It was in the air. And this character was supposed to be the model for one of the Cagney movies. So I think it was there to begin with. And of course, Warner Brothers made a whole bunch of Irish gangster movies.
It's funny how the gangster movies, all the way back as far as you can go, how gangsters were sort of liked by the common people, like people that watch these movies and see that they kind of idolize these kind of gangsters. It's strange how that is.
Yeah, it's true today. It is kind of weird. Well, they like the idea of I think shooting it out. No matter how terrible this guy is, he's surrounded by hundreds of cops and he's shooting it out. So it's like David versus Goliath in the kind of sense. And I think the guts that these people have now, not for any good purpose, but I think it's attractive. And look, violence is attractive. You know, it leads. So, you look at TV shows and tremendous amounts of cop shows, you know, doctor shows, legal shows, but stuff with a visceral feel to it. Beginning, middle, and end, and you can do a lot of violence and special effects, and basically, and this one definitely had plenty of it. There were a lot of stories like this, and it's also there. It's interesting that the people in these stories, the two killers, were both little guys, and Jimmy Cagney was 5'4", so that seems to be, a theme a little bit, to make up for your size or for whatever reason.
Yeah, the people I know that are 5'2" and 3/4" are the same.
That would be me.
They're the same way,
And I've never killed anybody that anybody's ever found out about.
Yeah.
I'm researching you right now, so.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, he used a different name, so,
Well, that's true.
So now, Francis Crowley, so how much do you research the real people behind it? Did you research Francis Crowley a lot?
Well, yeah, I researched, kind of whatever I could get on him. What was also interesting with Crowley is that there was a newsreel on him when he was captured. And this newsreel went all over the country. You know, at the time, movies would show newsreels in between movies. And this is one of the first kind of shootouts. And so that was like a great kind of addition to it. he said, you know, I basically do the research however I can find it. It's usually a lot of it is on the internet, but you know, I might find a link to something else. Often when I'm researching one crime, I read about another one and I get interested in that. So it's largely, at least to begin with, newspapers, old newspapers.
And these were young people too. Crowley, I think, was only 19 when this happened, and his girlfriend Helen Walsh, I believe, was like only 16.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, people are worried about kids going wrong today. Go back in history. There's a lot of people like that. and he was like, I don't want to say he was programmed. He wasn't, but he had all the factors that could help make him the way he was. So he was born out of wedlock in 1913. His stepbrother, John, had been killed by police in 1925. So, he was a Nixie fighter. The Nixie fighter is an obscure underworld term that goes back to gangs in St. Louis around 1900. But it's someone who likes to fight police, someone who hates police. And he was definitely one of them. And also, since he was a little guy, he always carried two guns, and that's why he was known as Two Gun Crowley. They had better nicknames than they could. you know, so he got into it. He was already wanted by police for robbery. And his partner, a guy by the name of Fats Duringer, had killed his girlfriend in Crowley's car the week before. And then Crowley, with his new 16-year-old girlfriend, was sitting in the car in Merrick, Long Island, and police come just to, you know, see what was going on. It was kind of like a lover's room. And when the patrolman, Fred Hirsch, asked him for identification, Crowley immediately shot and killed him. The guy was a father of four. And, of course, this is big news, and the whole police force was out looking for him. And the authorities were afraid that he would kill his girlfriend because she was a witness. But the girlfriend's mother had an interesting reaction. She said, Frank Crowley is a splendid young man, no matter what people say about his being a murderer. Now, if she had listened to Crowley, Crowley said, sure, I killed him. I fired 16 shots at him. I killed that copper deader than hell. Then I got out of the car to make sure he was dead. Got a slightly different feeling from that. And so all of the police were mobilized to find him, and he and his girlfriend and Derringer are hiding out. And they go to this apartment on West 90th Street. And it turns out to be, and this is a hint to all future criminals, never hide from the police with your new girlfriend in your old girlfriend's apartment. That's what he did. And his old girlfriend got sort of pissed and went to a bar and sort of blabbing it, and then got back to the police. So they surrounded this apartment. And there was like 300 policemen, set up machine guns on the roofs. And at about 5 o'clock, the battle began. Now, first, the cops tried to, you know, just break the door down. And the cop who led that was a guy named Johnny Broderick, who was known as the toughest cop in New York. He was actually quite famous for a while because his beat was Broadway. And he was a character in a lot of the Walter Winchell and Damon Runyon stories. His character is Johnny Bannock in stories by Runyon. So anyway, they knock at the door and they're met by gunfire. So the members of the police squad chopped a hole in the roof of the building and fired into the apartment and drove Crowley and Derringer back into their and back of the apartment. And during the this is a 2-hour battle, we shot over 700 rounds in the apartment. And during lulls in the fighting, Crowley and his girlfriend Walsh wrote their final messages to the world in case they did not survive. And Crowley says, "Under my cloth is a weary heart, but a kind one. A heart that would do nobody any harm. I had nothing else to do. That's why I went around and bumped off cops." And his girlfriend was also very philosophical. "If I die in my face you are able to see, wave my hair and make my face pretty. Do my nails all over. I don't use this kind of polish. It's too dark. I like pale pink." So about 7 o'clock, their ammunition is just about exhausted. And Crowley's got 3 bullets in his arms and legs. And they give up. And when they rush into the apartment and search Crowley, they find another gun strapped to his thigh. But this event, and you can find this on the internet, led to this very famous music in 1930. And it's wonderful to watch because it's got that, you know, that kind of announcer voice in the newsreels in the 1930s, kind of that nasal, it's like a Walter Winchell kind of nasal voice. And you know, with a lot of excitement, they were arrested and they were tried. Wasn't like a big trial. His girlfriend turned police evidence, so nothing happened there. And they were convicted pretty quickly, and he was executed before his 21st birthday. And then 24 years later, happened again. And what's interesting is that he was born in 1913. This other guy was also born in 1913. Now, this shootout happened in 1955. And this guy was Augie Robles. And this happened on the Upper East Side. They both were slums at the time that these shootouts took place. And so the whole thing started with this guy. It was kind of this guy who he wanted to be a big criminal, but he had no judgment, no confidence, and no luck. This guy, his name is Martin Yamin. He had this idea to rob a big numbers guy in Baltimore. And he hired these two cops. That has happened. But two ex-cons, Joe Arnowitz and Joseph Sampson. And they entered the house posing as NAACP representatives. But this guy, Albert, who was the numbers boss, got the drop on them and blasted away with his gun. Arnowitz was wounded and he was arrested. So he agreed to turn state's evidence. And that's when Augie Robles came into the picture. He was hired to kill this guy. And Augie Robles had been in trouble since his age 9. He was sent to reform school for attacking his mother. He had been in trouble with the law for like 35 of his 43 years. And he had a real reputation. He was a contract killer. So anyway, Robles lured this guy Arnowitz into a car, killed him, and left his body conveniently in front of a casket company. So the police learn about Robles. They go to arrest him. They find him at his girlfriend's house. There's 3 detectives there. Just before they leave, it's a cold day out. And Robles says, "Hey, can I, you know, put my overcoat on?" They said, "Yeah." Well, he had a gun in his overcoat. He got a drop on the 3 detectives, and he took their guns. Then he earning the name 4-Gun Robles. So the police go back and they're very sheepish, and they find a guy who knows him, a cop who knows him, who gives him a tip. You know, try this apartment. And so they try the apartment, knocks on the door, says police. And Robles, who recognized the voice of the cop, says, "Oh, hello, Frank." And then fires his way out of the building. So they found where he was holed up on 112th Street. And there was 12 heavily armed detectives, six wearing bulletproof vests. They tried to crash it down, but were met with a hail of gunfire. 200 police with machine guns.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If. Only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us. Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
So this thing took a couple of hours. And between volleys, Grover shouted, "You'll never take me alive." And after an hour, the detectives burst into the apartment and exchanged shots with Robles. And the cop ordered him to surrender. Robles said, "I'll think about it." And the gunfire continued, and Robles was dead. And Robles' story was the inspiration for a 1968 movie called Madigan, which starred Richard Widmark and Harry Gardino as detectives who had 72 hours to find the killer who had taken their gun. And, you know, Augie's Last Stand became part of the neighborhood legend. You know, all the kids would say, "Come and get me, I'm Augie Robles." And but his influence had one more victim to claim, which was 4 years later, just a few blocks from the shootout, police arrested Angel Robles, Augie's 19-year-old nephew, for killing an unarmed grocer. Angel told police that his uncle Augie told them how to shoot and told them the best targets are cops.
Well, either they got killed, you know, in gun battle, or they seemed to get... They sure didn't waste any time executing people, did they?
No, they did not. Mm. It's true. It could be as quick as 3 or 4 months.
Yeah, I think that's good in a way. Saves a lot of money and time, right?
Well, it's good in a way, except that you're guaranteed that you will execute an innocent man. That's a lead pipe sink, really, because there have been so many cases where that's happened, and even cases where the people confessed, but they hadn't done it. And, you know, it continues to happen. That's sort of one of the reasons that I'm against capital punishment, because it will guarantee that innocent people are killed. I mean, I just feel that the biggest thing is to take them out of circulation, protect the public. And if you're in jail without hope of parole, that does pretty much the same thing. It's cheaper. People don't realize how much these legal battles cost. They cost millions of dollars. So it's actually more expensive to try to kill a guy than it is to keep him alive for the next 30 years.
Yeah. Yeah, it's an interesting process for sure.
Yeah.
Well, some of these movies actually kind of made a case in the public consciousness against the death penalty, it seems.
Yeah, yeah, and that's an interesting one. It's the Barbara Graham case. Barbara Graham did not have a great beginning. She was born in Oakland. Her mother was a 15-year-old prostitute who viewed her as an annoying burden. And when Barbara was two, her mother was sent to the Ventura School for Girls, the reformatory in Southern California. Well, 15 years later, Barbara was also sent to the Ventura School. And released to marry a U.S. Coast Guardsman, went to business school, had a couple of children, but the marriage didn't work out. And she was jailed in San Diego for lewd and disorderly conduct in 1942 and 44. And she worked briefly for Sally Stanford, a legendary madam in San Francisco. Sally Stanford had probably the most luxurious house of prostitution in the United States. But again, she drifted into the drug use, and she made money by kind of luring men into crooked gambling. And she had, you know, what's interesting is that she had absolutely no sense of self-protection. She had no common sense. So, for example, in 1950, these two ex-cons burst into Sally Stanford's apartment and started beating her. And Stanford broke away, ran to the window, and started screaming. And said, you're going to get nothing. And these robbers ran out. Well, when the trial came, Barbara agreed to give one of the robbers an alibi, even though she didn't even know him that well. And, of course, the alibi was blown out of the court, and she was sent up for a year for perjury. And then things sort of kept going downhill for her. And she married this guy who was a drug-addicted bartender, and he had some pretty shady friends. What I write in my thing is, bad taste in men has been the downfall of many women, but rarely has anyone chosen as poorly as Barbara. Because her husband's friends, these guys Jack Santos and Emmett Perkins, were vicious killers. They had killed a grocer and his three kids earlier. And they heard a story about this woman, Mabel Monahan, who was a wealthy woman, and her son-in-law was a big gambler in Vegas. And there was a rumor that she had $100,000 in a safe in her house. So, now, Barbara had never been involved in any kind of violent crime at all. But they needed Barbara because this woman was pretty wise, and she was not going to open the door just to some stranger. So they figured, well, she might open it to a woman. And that's kind of what Barbara's job was. And the robbery was a total disaster. There was no money in it, but they ended up killing the woman. And they arrested, one guy agreed to the safecracker, who was not involved in any of the violence, had turned state's evidence, but these criminals found out about it, so they took him for a ride. And then there was another guy there who also was going to be help to get the money out, who agreed to turn state's evidence. And this is kind of where the controversy happened. So Barbara and these two guys are being tried for murder. Their trial judge is this guy named Charles Frick, who sent more people to the gas chamber than any other judge in California. And, you know, a murder case really depends on a lot whose story the jury likes best. But Barbara was her worst enemy because, you know, you mostly, you're on trial for murder. You're a woman on trial for murder. You're going to dress very conservatively. You're going to try to be, you know, meek. She didn't that. She didn't do that. She dressed in tight clothes. She talked tough. She glared the prosecution. And, you know, she had kind of internalized the criminal code with this don't tell, don't rat on them. So the guy who, his name is John True, who's testifying against them, claimed that when the robbery was going on, that Barbara had beaten the woman over the head with a pistol. And the press started calling her Bloody Bad. And the name stuck. Also, she was pretty easy to manipulate. And they made a deal with one of the other prisoners who said she knew someone who could give her an who could give Barbara an alibi. Guy turned out to be an undercover cop. Now, this is something they couldn't, you couldn't really legally do today, but at that time, it could. So, anyway, there's the trial. They're all convicted. And after the conviction, there was a newspaper reporter for the San Francisco Examiner. His name was Ed Montgomery. He'd won the Pulitzer Prize. He'd actually found a body that the police were looking for in another crime. But he started corresponding with her. And he started feeling that she was innocent. Now, when she was executed, this is like, as she gets into the gas chamber, the prison guard says, take deep breaths, it's easier. And she says, how would you know? You know? So she is killed, she is executed. And then they decide to make a movie about her life based on the newsman's stories. And Susan Hayward played the part. And she played a part in a movie called I Want to Live. And this movie won her the Academy Award. And sort of when it came out, it was a lot of people started feeling, you know, she shouldn't have been killed. And I think it's highly unlikely that she beat anyone. What's much more likely is that the other people did. And this guy who was testifying was trying to make himself look better. And he just buried his testimony. That's probably pretty much what did happen. So if this became a huge cause célèbre, the capital punishment, and this happened to come at the same time that Carol Chessman was fighting for his life in San Quentin. I don't know how much this goes back a ways. It goes back to late 40s and early 50s. So I don't know how many of your listeners know about Carol Chessman. Carol Chessman was a career criminal who was convicted, actually it was for a number of rapes, but he was given the death sentence by, it was sort of, they claimed it was kidnapping because he moved the victim 8 feet, whatever it was, he was sentenced to death. And then he wrote this book called Death Cell 2455 that became a huge bestseller in the 1950s, and there was a huge effort to save him. So both of these things were hitting at the same time, and that really brought up the capital punishment. You know, pick a four. Oh, one other thing is, as Barbara was led into the gas chamber, she said, good people are always so sure that they're right. So, you know, that was a case, really, that it goes to a larger issue.
It's interesting to look back at that. There's things that you didn't realize at the time, you know, until you do. How many cases in all have you put together on these?
I have a list of about 12, probably.
Yeah. So are you going to present them all online there on your website, or are you going to put them in a book? What do you think?
I may put them, you know, I always find it useful to have deadlines. And I've had these articles published in the Crime Traveler, which is a really good website about crime. It's published in the UK. And I think I'll continue probably doing that. The next case actually is interesting because, you know, I'm just going to tease it a little bit. We know that the Zodiac case, actually, we know who did it. Now, and I wrote an article, you know, just recently, there was this whole big thing about this other guy doing it in near Yosemite the rest of his life, and the whole, you know, this producer had this whole group of ex-FBI agents and things who were sort of claiming that to be true, although when you really investigated, these guys had very little to do with the case. But anyway, it's pretty clear that this guy didn't do it. And the case I'm referring to is not the California case. It's the case that happened 6,000 miles away. It's called the Korean Zodiac Killer. And what's interesting about it is two really good directors made movies about the cases. You know, Zodiac was made in 2007 by David Fincher. And, you know, the guy who won the Academy Award for Parasite in 2019 is one of the great directors. And his second movie, he loosely based it on this Zodiac case in Korea. And then after it happened, they found out who did it. And I can go into that at one time. But it's interesting to compare the movies, you know, in terms of how close they are to the truth and just how this is handled. Because, you know, if you're making a movie about a case that's not solved, you have a little tough road. I mean, most cases, you know who did it, and either they escape or they get killed or whatever happens at the end. This time, you don't know, so you have to end it in some way that is interesting enough, I guess.
You know, it's interesting. How do you compare them? Like, why would it be the Korean Zodiac? What were the similarities in the two cases?
Oh, okay. I'll tell you. Well, first of all, it was called that. It was the first serial killing case in Korea. And this person killed and raped 10 women. He didn't kill them the same way that the Zodiac did. You know, the Zodiac, didn't have sex with any of the, you know, victims, and he shot them or stabbed them. This guy would strangle them, and he had sort of a way of doing it that was his modus operandi, I guess you could call it. And so he went up to like 10 people. But what's similar about it is they were huge cases, and literally thousands of people were interviewed, grilled, try to find out. So that's why I didn't name it, but it is called the Zodiac case because of the original. You know, there's one in New York also, the New York Zodiac. I'm glad to see the original San Francisco Zodiac.
Yeah. So what do you got next? Like, what's coming up after all this? Like, what do you got planned in the works now?
Well, just, I think a series, a series of these stories and a book. I'm going to be in London in a couple of months. There is a thing called CrimeCon, which is
right.
Interesting, very interesting idea. I was at an earlier one. Basically, it's people who are into true crime. It turns out to be about 60 to 70% women. And there are panelists, you know, people who are detectives or whatever, who have something to do with it. Usually have people who are involved in some of the TV true crime shows. And, you know, people go, they watch, they buy books. They try to figure out who did it. There are some, you know, there is now being some like private detectives. It's like crowdsourcing. This is happening. There have been a number of cases where they don't know who did it, but a whole bunch of people try to solve it. I don't think it's a great police technique, but gets people involved.
Yeah.
And, yeah. So that's that kind of involvement. You know, it gives you a chance to sort of throw yourself in and kind of be an amateur detective.
That's pretty interesting. Now, what's your website, or where do people find you?
My website is crookstourer.com. And the other website would be Crime Trapping. That would be the one that would have my latest.
Great. Now, we'll have that up on our website as well, so people can find you and read a little bit of your stuff and go from there. You know,
great.
It's been great. It's been very interesting. It's always good to hear about old crimes and different takes on it. So thank you. Our guest today has been Paul Drexler. Thanks very much.
To find out more about our show, guests, or to listen to past shows from our archive, please go to www.houseofmysteryradio.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.
The biggest names in tennis are coming to Paris for the most anticipated Roland Garros in years. Tennis Channel Plus is your place to watch. Stream every court from your phone or smart TV live in HD. Experience 3 weeks of unparalleled tournament access as the world's top players in tennis face off against each other. Will the veteran champions continue their dominance, or will a fresh face emerge to challenge their legacy on the clay courts? Daily live coverage of this epic showdown begins Monday, May 20th. Don't miss a matchup. Stream it now with Tennis Channel Plus to be there when it happens.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.